Mini-episode 1808 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1808. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with our FDH Hoops analyst, Ben Chu. And given the timing of this mini episode, which I have to tell you was not scheduled, was not on our calendar, this was something that Ben pitched to me on very short notice. And of course, it is the blockbuster Luka AD trade. We are here to give you more or less in real time, hours after this hit the transom here, our thoughts on this unprecedented moment in not only NBA history, but I would say also sports history with what we saw. You just don't see things like this happen. The biggest, I would say, superstar for superstar trade in sports history. You don't generally see that, but here we are. It has come down. It is broken. Ben broke the news for me when I got up this morning. And Ben, pleasure to have you here, my man. And I can't wait to chew this over with you.
No pun intended. I appreciate it as always, Rick. And obviously the news has sent a shockwave. Emergency pods are everywhere these days, so we might as well do one as well. So,
yeah, and I got to say, like, I normally...
Yeah, the iron is hot, right?
Yeah, and maybe this will teach me to be so judgmental, because I look at some of the media figures that do emergency podcasts, and I'm just like, well, yeah, because the world can't wait to hear what you have to say about it. And yet, here we are. So maybe I need to be a little more humble about judging others for doing emergency podcasts. But literally the way that I found out about it, everybody's going to have a story. Everybody's going to have a story of how they found out. So I roll out of the rack this morning for 8 a.m. Mass Eastern time here, and I get a text from Ben from at some point in the middle of the night that says, also, did we want to do a quick Luka AD trade video episode today? I'm like, wait, what? And so I'm going through, and my first thought is, you know, has Antifa finally put magic mushrooms in the Portland water supply like there's been rumors about all these years? Is he imagining this? And I find out very quickly, Ben, you were not imagining this.
No, that's just that. It was a really weird situation, too, because as everyone saw, and I think a lot of NBA players just even assumed it was fake. Like, everyone thought Shams Charania, ESPN's newsbreaker for the NBA, had been hacked, had someone stolen something, or was there any sort of, like, you know, was there something that occurred? But it's a true statement. It's a true fact. We're now going into a timeline where Luka Doncic is going to be a Los Angeles Laker, and Anthony Davis is heading to Dallas. So there's a lot of interesting sort of, you know, machinations of this deal. It's really interesting to see some of the news right now from Dallas and Nico Harrison's perspective, their GM. So I feel like there's a lot to get to, but I feel like just the trade itself is a big win for the Lakers. It opens up a title window also for Dallas for the next couple of years too, but it is very interesting because we've never seen a blockbuster trade like this in at least American pro sports.
No, we haven't. And I mean, I was going through and I was trying to find some possible parallels, but like everything I could find falls just way, way, way short of the mark. One would be, of course, and this is one of these things where if you're not on America's North Coast the way that I am, the Cleveland, Ohio area, Rocky Colavito wasn't a big deal to the rest of the country, but he was pretty huge here. Much like how the late, great Michael Stanley was our Springsteen, Rocky Colavito, because of his time with the Tribe and the way that it ended the first time around, was just a legend. That in 1960, very infamous deal, he was traded to Detroit. He was the defending home run champion. Harvey Keene was the defending batting average champion for Detroit. And it ended up being, as they said about the Tribe from then on, the curse of Rocky Colavito. But I mean, a guy who was, you know, the defending home run champion 1 year for the defending batting champion 1 year. That doesn't come anywhere close to this. This is a thing where on a regional level, like where I live, this kind of hits home, but to the rest of the country, not so much. 20 years later, an exchange of top NFL quarterbacks. One name that you'll get, Ben. One name that might have been a little bit before your time. Obviously, Ken Stabler is a name that you know. The other one, I don't know what your familiarity with Dan Pastorini is, but the guy that, yeah, okay, so that provided the vertical compliment to Earl Campbell with those Houston Oilers teams back then. Stabler was having a contract holdout, and that's the one thing I remember of like a big-time quarterback for a big-time quarterback, Stabler for Pastorini. Spoiler alert, neither one of them did what they did in the other place, what they had done previously. But Stabler, a Hall of Famer, I'm pretty sure Pastorini's not. So, again, this is nowhere close. If you're looking at NBA history, I would say, like, what it would be in an alternate universe, like Charles Barkley about the time that he got moved early 90s, like if he gets moved for Patrick Ewing or something like that, or if he gets moved for Scottie Pippen, maybe that might be, or like Shaq when he got traded. If he got traded for Vince Carter, maybe, assuming that Vince Carter and Kobe could have, you know, coexisted there, but like, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the universe of like, what if this thing happened? These corny trades that people like to belch out to each other about, and you'll laugh and you say it'll never happen. Those things that never happened are the closest parallel to what we saw here.
Right. And I mean, looking back through NBA history, there's been a lot of major moves, guys like, you know, Kareem going to the Lakers, Wilt was dealt many times during his time with the Philadelphia Warriors. And yep, on top of that too, like the closest thing I can even compare it to, there was a rumor, it came out during the timeline of The Last Dance, that there was a rumor that at one point Jerry Krause of Chicago wanted to trade Scottie Pippen to the Seattle Sonics for Sean Kemp at the time I think it was the subsequent year they had just made the finals.
Okay.
So there was a discussion of that at one point, but we've never seen anything of this. And it was a shock to pretty much everyone because yeah. I think a lot of us thought not necessarily that Luka could not get traded, but maybe he would opt out. Maybe there was a scenario where the Mavericks maybe make a deal in the offseason because he is heading into a supermax extension. Mm-hmm. So it's understandable, but it's kind of flabbergasting how this deal got done. I mean, in the totality of the trade, it's clearly a win for LA because it's, you know, they're getting an MVP candidate, top five player in the league, and you're giving up Anthony Davis, who again is a top 75 guy, one of the best big men in today's game. But again, he is getting up there in age. He is 31. So, and then we have that, the book, but
yes. And when we do the top 80 players in NBA history, when we have the update coming, we'll have to be obviously talking a lot about this. Of course, myself,
my big thing too, right? Ben and Russ Cole. Also feel like just looking at the state of the Western Conference. Like, I think to me, that was the big question. I think a lot of people are talking about, which is, does this deal vault either of these teams into the conversation? Because again, we have to know the top three in the Western Conference at this point are all very young teams, Oklahoma City, Houston, and the Memphis Grizzlies. So again, I don't think this is going to push any of their championship aspirations up this season, but it gets a lot more interesting now. And we've known this too. We've never seen, at least on a team, and I'm speaking in terms of the Lakers right now, is that we've never seen a team with two primary ball handlers who can score and rebound at the same time. So it's going to be an interesting situation, but I think both, I essentially grade the deal as good for both teams. It's mainly more of a short-term scenario for Dallas, and it's a long-term scenario for the Lakers because they were in before this deal even happened, the real discussion was when LeBron retires, where do they go from here? And right now, it's very simply, they're going to be going for the Luka Doncic.
Yeah, they got their next guy. I mean, it was looking like the Lakers were going to be like the old Clippers for a number of years. And what would that look like? I mean, you know who the happiest people about this are. The broadcast partners, of course, for the NBA. NBC coming in at just the right time. Hey, we're getting the Lakers when they're still going to be relevant for many years. Amazon the same way. Disney already had the NBA. But this is a thing where when you talk about the shock value of the deal, I'm going through on Google News today, and sometimes you just come across something that makes you giggle. I saw a news source with a headline that questioned the deal, and that news source was Al Jazeera. And I'm just like, wow, even Al Jazeera knows this is a bad move for the Dallas Mavericks. But in going through, you know, we might have thought last night as this was happening that the biggest shock of the weekend would be Jey Uso winning the Royal Rumble. But then you wake up and you find out that this happened subsequently, a real hold my beer moment, because this is a thing where, again, you look at 2024, the news headlines that were happening, the shocks one after another, a lot of people comparing it to 1968. 2025 has had some real hold my beer moments for 2024. And what's clear is that February is going to do the same thing to January. Like, this year is just going to keep getting nuttier the further we go along in it when you have things like this happening. Because, again, this is so unprecedented in sports history. I mean, there's no way to kind of make sense of it in that way. And in terms of, again, the conventional wisdom that's out there, that if anybody really won the deal, and I'll be part of the conventional wisdom, I frankly am, that the Lakers really won the deal. Because, again, not only did they get their next guy, you're talking about this, Ben, even you, and you were a little more even-handed than I was, but you're kind of like, well, in the near term, Dallas, and they get Anthony Davis and everything like that. But, I mean, you and I have been talking about for a while. We get a number of these themes that are kind of ongoing when you and I are talking NBA basketball. And one of them has been, you know, when you look at the last season, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, the future is now. You got a team like Phoenix that's just, they're all win now, short window. Doesn't work. I mean, this is what Dallas is doing. Dallas is doubling down on a strategy that I have to say looks obsolete. And, you know, even if they're going to have to win a title or two in the next couple of years to not just be sitting there hating life when Luka's lighting it up for the Lakers for a minimum of probably 10 years to come. I mean, he's got to re-sign, but you have to think that he will, even without the Supermax, which he's lost.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, I mean, even if LeBron is the question also turns into LeBron at this point, because I think the perception that he was going to retire relatively either at the end of this season or maybe going into next year. And I'm not saying LeBron's going to play past 5 years, but this is a question he has to ask himself now, because he gets to play with one of the best young players in the league at this point, just from a skill set. And a guy that he has even said and mentioned over Twitter, essentially, that said he is his favorite player in the league. So it's an interesting situation, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Dallas and that this team kind of reacts the rest of the way, because they're right now at eighth overall right now in the Western Conference. They're on the cut line right now making the playoffs. So it feels like Dallas is a team that if AD can come in there and play like AD and he can stay healthy, there will be a definite threat, because we've seen how good Dallas has been without Luka this season. I mean, excuse me. If he comes in healthy and he comes ready to play and he can team with Kyrie, who they have a very good personal relationship, so I can't think there'd be a problem there. So It feels like, to me at least, Dallas is just going all in. Like you said, they're going all in for a title in the next couple of years, and then they figured we're going to figure it out from there. And again, the ultimate question, and I think the thing we're going to figure out more about, is was this Luka essentially saying he wanted out? There's reports saying that that's not the case. Is it Dallas essentially saying, we don't want to pay you $347 million if we don't think you're in shape consistently? Or at the same level, like, the question that I think we're all going to just ask in general is this a money-saving move, essentially, at the end of the day? I know we've seen teams do this preemptively before, and I guess you can say it's part of it, but we've never seen a young player of Luka's caliber getting traded. After, and I mean, the thing that's even crazier now, if you really think about it, this team just made the finals last season.
Yeah.
And they are still, you know, they're in the middle of the pack in the West right now, but it feels like they could make a run if they wanted to with Luka when he was coming back. But I guess it all comes down to the Mavericks felt like their title window with Luka probably was just not worth the amount of money that was going to take up at the end of the day.
Yeah, that is what they were looking at. And again, fears about, they're not going to say this out loud, because, you know, thus far, Nico Harrison's main quotes have been about upgrading the defense and defense wins championships. And it is very, very formidable now having Lively and Gafford there in the front court along with Anthony Davis. I mean, they're going to be one of the toughest teams in the league around the rim. But this is a deal where they're concerned. It's already leaking out. They're concerned about his conditioning, the fact that he had gotten up as far as a doughy 260 pounds at one point this year. And I have to tell you, from texting back and forth this morning with FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, he and I were bandying back and forth, you know, the notion of a guy that you mentioned earlier in a potential trade scenario of decades ago, Sean Kemp. And that is Dallas afraid that he's going to become Sean Kemp if they give him the deal? And I just think, look, that's ridiculous. I mean, we didn't see the Sean Kemp thing happening anyways. I, as a Cavs fan back in the day, was pretty hyped about it. Didn't want to lose Terrell Brandon, but come on, it's Sean Kemp. So I'm not saying this as somebody who saw that one coming ahead of time, but like Luka has such an insane kind of competitive streak about him. The like just becoming, you know, the before part and then the end part of White Goodman from Dodgeball, you know, the parts that were there like at the beginning and the end of his story. I don't see that happening. I don't see Luka becoming White Goodman. And that's what Dallas, I guess, you know, through a whisper campaign or whatever, I guess that's what they're going to make you kind of try to believe, is that that's what they were afraid of. But that's where this is one of these things. You know, maybe it works out. Maybe they can get a title in the next couple of years. I don't see it. I mean, but they're going to have to for this not to be just like an all-time debacle, essentially. But that's a thing where you keep Luka, you ride him. There's not anybody in the world that's going to say to Nico Harrison, if he ends up getting fat and unplayable, like, hey, why didn't you dump him then? There's nobody that, the hindsight is 20/20, people, but no rational person would have gotten on him for that. The level of risk that he's taking, as insane as I think it is, I mean, 99 out of 100 other GMs in the league just ride this one out because it's the safer way to go. Right. This isn't the safer way to go, but I think it's the insane way to go, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I think the real question, too, for Nico Harrison is that, is this a better long-term move for the franchise? Because if they felt like Luka's ceiling was what it was,
mm-hmm.
Is it worth saving some of the capital, saving, you know, potentially maybe weakening the team in the long run, but in the short term, you're strengthening the roster? So, again, and I mean, the real question, too, and we're going to see this for sure, especially since it is the Lakers, is one of the marquee franchises in the league, that people want to play in L.A. And mm-hmm. I think already, you know, the thought of playing with Luka Doncic already is a net positive for most players, but I feel like it's even going to get a bigger bump now because it feels too like, again, there to me, and I think you'll agree with this too, Rick, there has to be a little bit more to this story that we truly don't know yet, because mm-hmm. on the outside it seems a little, like you said, weird that this deal is being made at this time mm-hmm. instead of just writing it out and then maybe waiting until later maybe in the off season, or making a decision closer to, you know, the beginning of next year. But I feel almost like this entire situation is going to be more put under microscope than a lot of these other trades, because it's arguably the most blockbuster trade in league history at this point. And if we're looking forward, you know, if Luka can stay healthy, he is fully capable of leading a team to the finals. We already have proof of that. So I feel like the Lakers were down a little bit. Now they're coming back up again, and we'll see how it works this season, because I feel like a lot of people are saying right now that they lost a big guy. They're kind of done right now. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Like, you know, how are you going to stop these guys? If you really, truly watch the league right now, at least this season, there's only a handful of big guys that are really super productive at this point. So I don't necessarily think that they couldn't make a run at this point. And you have two of the top 10 best players in the NBA on the same team at the same time. I would not be shocked to see the Lakers make a title run this season if they can get maybe another piece, or just even, like we would argue, a piece somewhere like a lower tier piece from one of these other teams. The names that come to mind are like Chris Boucher in Toronto, or like Luka Garza in Minnesota. And like just getting a serviceable big man who can help block shots and make plays. And I think we both have discussed this. There's going to be another trade for LA to shore up their back line, essentially.
There has to be, because, again, they already didn't have a very good defense with the great rim protection of Anthony Davis. And so, yeah, so they're going to have to do something to really shore that up. It is interesting in all of this, too, and as you get to the whole kind of conspiracy theory thing in terms of perceptions, that when people are saying, number one, why didn't Nico Harrison do a little bit more shopping around the league? Because no other GMs had an idea that this was coming. This is one of these things where the shock and awe of this is the rest of the NBA being just completely blindsided, as we all were. But like, not even the insiders in the league had any sense this was coming. Obviously, it's a sensitive thing. The minute that it becomes clear that you're shopping Luka and then he becomes dissatisfied, maybe you can't quite get what you're looking to get for him back. But this is one of these things where, again, the Lakers had the only crack at this thing here. And I'm struck by, I heard people saying on the radio this morning, well, no Austin Reeves coming back. I don't know that necessarily. I don't know if the Lakers would have let that be a deal breaker or not, but it's not surprising that they would have fought on that point there. But not even like my boy, Dalton Connect, the great Tennessee Vol, coming back to Dallas here. It's interesting because there are other players that are in the deal. It's being portrayed as a one-for-one, although it's actually not. But this is a deal where I almost wonder, this is the conspiracy theory in me, that if there was a secondary piece coming back from the Lakers that was a little bit more substantial, that Nico Harrison might worry that it looks like your standard four quarters for a dollar kind of a deal, which when you talked about Wilt getting traded before and Kareem and pretty much anywhere else in sports history, it's either been four quarters for a dollar or it's been draft picks, but rarely is it superstar for superstar. That, in addition to the seemingly untradeable player being traded, that's the secondary part of this that makes it so absolutely overwhelming to us all, is that it's superstar for superstar. And I wonder if Nico Harrison felt like he needed that narrative and hence wasn't going to ask for anybody potentially like the Lakers' first-round pick, Dalton Connect, from this year.
Right, and I think one of the big questions, because there is still a lot of reporting going on right now. We do not know exactly for sure how many teams were involved initially in this whole plan. I heard rumors that there was at least another team that had been offered Luka Doncic. We don't know if that report is true or not, but it feels like of those two teams that it feels like, again, we've seen, and you've just discussed like the structure of most trades in the NBA, and it makes logical sense, at least for Dallas, to go get a superstar. Because if Luka, let's say Luka came out and say, I'm unhappy on the Mavericks, his trade value then plummets around the league, because most teams know that information now. So I felt like it's one of those moves that Dallas is trying to get ahead of that scenario.
Right.
If that was to come true. But the big thing I'm more shocked by is that it's not necessarily that the package they gave that was coming back was that bad. Like, I mean, you're getting, you know, like quality players and a draft pick back. But I think we were all shocked that it was only one draft pick. Most of the time when we see a superstar get traded, you get more than one draft pick.
Yeah. And that's, and like I said, I think, you know, Nico Harrison in his own mind is counting on Anthony Davis to vindicate this to such a degree that I think he might actually, weirdly enough, been more comfortable with that and with maybe a little bit less coming back. Because, again, this is going to be a perception war from here on in. I mean, you're either going to be the genius that did the thing that the rest of the world thought was so stupid, myself included, or you're going to be the guy that just, you know, defied everything and just really, you know, yeah, if you're either going to succeed on a gigantic level, or you're going to be remembered like centuries from now. Like, you know, in 2538. Remember that Nico Harrison guy who was dumb enough to trade Luka before he was really even in his prime? And that's the whole thing. It's the perception war on this thing and how it gets written in history. And I wonder to what degree, as the respective general managers are sitting there, that factors in. For Rob Pelinka, I'm going to say not at all, because Rob Pelinka probably would have given up even more than he did to get Luka there. Because, again, what this does, it extends the window for the Lakers. They have their next franchise player. Anthony Davis, in terms of the timeline of his career, 31 going on 32, oft injured over the years, he wasn't going to be the big, you know, post-LeBron superstar for them to continue to build around because of the trajectory of his career. But this is a thing now. And I said to you yesterday, we were talking off air and I was talking to you about some of the recent headlines and some of the NBA media being a little bit befuddled at the notion of the Cavs potentially being a magnet for basketball talent right now. Talking about the whole notion of that the, in today's NBA, the mountain will come to Muhammad. If you have a good enough situation, players are going to want to be a part of it. Ironically, that's kind of where the Lakers are. They're a legacy franchise, but now they have Luka. Before they had Luka, they didn't have anything to potentially lure anybody big time to coming there. But it's Luka and the promise of more, because it's just one of these things where everybody, especially today, has it into their heads. Like, the Lakers will always find a way. They just, like, how they continue to make these things happen over a period of time and create the cap room to make things happen and continue to lure players there. And I even go back to something like the Pau Gasol deal, where, I mean, he's not going to go down as one of the foundational Lakers of all time, but he was the piece that was needed to be the necessary sidekick to Kobe to get him the last two titles that they had there. And how they made that happen, basically giving up nothing of any kind of great importance to Memphis. Like, they always find a way. And that's what everybody's going to have in their mind. Players are going to look at the Lakers, and now they're a magnet again, because it's like, they're going to find a way to surround me and Luka with other players, because they always do.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a discussion, and we've seen it in other sports as well. It's like, some, you know, the best example we could say is Kansas City right now, the Chiefs for the Super Bowl. And
yeah.
Just how they're always able to continuously win and still get guys on that roster. And it just feels like, too, for the Lakers, that's what the Lakers do. You know, we've seen this time and time again. They don't really need to – being a legacy franchise in the NBA. And I know this might irritate some folks from Boston, but I also will say, too, of like, it is the glitz and glamour. It is the flashy team in the league. It's a team that I would think most people around the world know automatically, outside of maybe Chicago. But in relevancy, I feel like the Lakers are just – it's going to be big for them. It's showtime. It's Luka. You know, it's going to – we've seen there, like, a lot of teams in the league, you're forced almost to build through the draft. You're forced to – retain top talent and do the best you can. Well, we've seen that in OKC. We've seen it in Cleveland this year. But the Lakers don't have to do that. They are a legacy franchise, and you just need to get the guys that need to get you to that level. And you have to give Pelinka credit for waiting this out in a way, because I feel like a lot of GMs would have not made this sort of a move right away. Because he's kind of on a timeline that right now where – they haven't won since the bubble.
Yeah.
And last year it was a first round playoff exit. So they had to make a move, and this, whether it fell into his lap or not, this was a scenario that you had to pull the trigger. This is a great, you know, basketball talent that's going to just sell jerseys everywhere. You know, I saw a tweet that came out earlier today where saying frat bros around colleges in America will be the popular jersey for everybody, the Luka Lakers 77. So
yeah,
it's the Lakers. We shouldn't be surprised anymore. Like, I think the more surprising thing is that we saw a star for star trade in the NBA, because that rarely, if ever, happens in the NBA. Yeah. And it feels too like the way that the Lakers have built in the past, they're going to continue to build like that. They're going to acquire a team star player or best talent by any means necessary. And in this case, it was Pelinka's friendship with Nico Harrison that helped possibly push this over the top. So I know, even if Luka doesn't win a ring with the Lakers, I mean, Pelinka has to get a lot of credit, because he has been much maligned recently in the media.
Yeah. And that's, I'm trying to think of, like, what are the only possible ways that this story could get any crazier? And I landed on one of them. The only thing that could be any crazier is, Guess who got in Rob Pelinka's ear and said, I got a feeling about this. Why don't you just call Dallas and see if Luka's available? I'm going to say Jay Moore. What if Jay Moore is the brains behind this deal? I mean, that's the only way that this thing could get any weirder. And you mentioned Kansas City. That brings me to Super Bowl Media Week. Like, you know, Roger Goodell is going to have security that's going around there basically with these cattle prods. And anytime anybody asks a player what they think about the Luka deal, they're getting zapped. Roger Goodell is going to make sure that everything stays on message this week, because this is his nightmare. is for the NBA to, this is like the only thing the NBA could have done to take any attention away. I mean, the NFL bigfoots them at every opportunity. And you go to, I guess this is what it would take, like the biggest trade by far in NBA history and maybe even in sports history to kind of be able to bigfoot Super Bowl week. But this is a thing where, again, you know, you talk about it from the Lakers perspective and everything with them and how this sets them up and this really extends their runway significantly. In terms of the Dallas Mavericks, they are a team where I have a little bit more familiarity with some of their day-to-day stuff just by dint of, as I have referenced previously, a friend of our show, the Dumb Zone podcast out of Dallas, a guy that I worked with many, many years ago on public radio in Athens, Ohio, Dan McDowell, the great show that he does with his partner, Jake Kemp. Jake does some work in the Dallas media covering the Mavericks on the Four Pointer podcast and some other outlets there. And I was checking out some of his early thoughts on this. And he's been hyping for a while Derek Lively in terms of, and I'm going to use this term, not him, because I've never heard him make the comparison to Evan Mobley, but that he thinks he has some room to grow offensively. So I'm going to say maybe sort of like a poor man's Evan Mobley. So that's an interesting fit with him and with Daniel Gafford next to AD in there, how they're going to make that work. And one of the things that Jake pointed out on Twitter this morning, and by the way, I'm going to point this out as well here too, on the Dumb Zone's YouTube, I believe on their YouTube channel today, live stream 4 o'clock Eastern time, emergency show just like we're doing since they're Dallas-based. They have to do this. But this is a thing where his analysis about PJ Washington moving a little bit more so to the wing in terms of the roster construction there. And what's that going to do? PJ Washington maybe not going to get as many great opportunities having to shoulder more minutes at the three. That's one of those nuances that I know that somebody who studies the game as much as you, Ben, must have some thoughts on.
Yeah, and I think that rotation is going to get a little bit interesting now because it's going to be overall much bigger. You have, you know, Lively is out for another couple of months, maybe back by Marchish. So I feel like if we are looking at the exact timeline of how, you know, those that roster construction is going to look at this point, at least in the rotation level, you're going to see PJ Washington probably take a step back a minute. Same thing with overall, just in terms of seeing like the overall flow of that sort of lineup. You're going to see instances, at least over the next 8 to 10 games, as they acclimate AD. You're going to see Washington get less minutes. Gafford's going to get less minutes. So it's going to be just really, really not crazy minute changes, but it's also, you're going to see, like, there's a definite change, and there's going to be some movement around it. We'll see there, and we've seen this with any team that makes a blockbuster deal like this. It takes time to acclimate. It's going to be at least 10 or 15 games. So it's going to feel like, to me at least, that the Mavericks are going to have to maybe shorten their rotation just a little bit and then see what ends up happening in terms of two. Because it is an interesting fit, because AD is a fantastic player and has started to get range out in three-point territory. So to me at least, what I would make the argument is that the Mavericks are going to be with how they've played so far this season, they definitely have the opportunity to make a run, because if Davis can essentially be that rim protection, find that way to hit more consistent shot making three-point attempts, I think that's going to be really big for them and maybe open up the floor a little bit more. Because again, we had to discuss, even though it made the finals last year when Kyrie and Luka were together on the floor, it was still very your turn, my turn.
And very much so.
And now I feel like it's going to be a completely different scenario, Rick, at this point. I feel like it's going to be like, hey, you know, it's going to be more Kyrie-centric, and then he's going to share the ball a lot more with Davis. So it's going to be interesting. And then for the Lakers, if on the flip side too, we've never seen two ball-dominant players play on the same team.
That is true. That's true. We've not seen that previously, and that is something that is going to be an interesting fit as far as seeing how that comes together. And I just think that, again, for both teams, there is going to be a significant acclimation period as we get going through this, and what that ends up looking like and how it ends up playing out for them as far as how it fits together. I will say also, too, as we get into different issues with the off the court components of this, the business components of what we're talking about here. I do think that in terms of the move for a new arena that the Mavericks have been looking for, potentially in league with a casino, if Texas gets casino gambling, that's a situation where I really just think that you've got an issue there where it's similar in a lot of ways, particularly if this thing goes as far south as it might, to the Browns and Jimmy Haslam. Jimmy Haslam finds himself schlepping for the new mega stadium in Brook Park at a time when everybody is insanely sour about the Deshaun Watson deal. And this is never going to be as sour as that, in the sense of Anthony Davis is at least a great player who's going to continue to be a great player. But I do wonder moving forward here if it might have the same kind of poisoning effect here in the next couple of years. And then particularly, again, the runway that the Lakers have from here on in. If this leaves a bad enough feeling in the mouth of the Mavericks fans, they just started their own streaming service for carrying their games. There's a lot of business components to this whole thing as well.
And I make the argument too, Rick, that we're not even talking about the media presence that Luka Doncic is going to have in LA. Like, we saw it with LeBron, and we see all of these deals are going to be made. And I feel like the question too is, like, as we enter the new phase of the NBA, because we're in this sort of interchange point, mm-hmm. where we're going to start to see the newer faces start to show up more, like Shea and Wemby and all that. And I think the question everyone is asking is, who's going to lead the NBA after LeBron and Curry retire?
Yeah.
And this is a definite boon for the NBA. It's a boon also for games in the upcoming. I know they both teams play each other on later in the month of February. So it's going to be a big boon for that. It's a big boon for All-Star Weekend because, let's be honest, one of the big discussions that the NFL has had with Pro Bowl week being pretty much a nothing some sort of scenario for them. It's been decreasing in ratings for the last 4 years since they switched to flag football. This, that the NBA All-Star game is getting, was essentially an afterthought, I think, this season. I think fans were really tired of, you know, just the whole event narrative at this time. And then they're also switching to, like, the Rising Stars Challenge for the actual game now. Mm-hmm. So I think that the All-Star, I would say that the All-Star weekend was probably at its lowest point in terms of interest, and right. Now this renews interest.
Yeah,
even though Luka isn't there and AD is not playing for a different conference or something like that, but it feels like to me that this is a huge deal for the NBA. And considering we've come out of the whole ratings 40% issue to now this, I mean, when a marquee franchise like the Lakers, I'm going to go on record and say, it's like, they're a great team, right? They were a great team with LeBron and AD at this point, but they were getting a little stale for fans. I think a lot of people would agree that.
Yeah.
Unless you were a diehard Laker fan, that team wasn't exactly the most exciting team to watch night to night.
Right.
So I feel like that's why this deal is going to make it even more interesting for them, just in terms of what they could do. And for Dallas, it's, again, it on the outset, it looks like not the best deal for them, but they are at least getting a guy who's All-Star caliber and will help their franchise. And again, you know, it's that whole damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. Because if you don't trade Luka, maybe he just leaves on his own, you get nothing. And then you really are going to deal with significant problems with the fan base at that point. But again, you have to sometimes make these moves in the NBA, and, you know, they at least got something for him that is of equal value. Not really sure in terms of longevity that makes sense, but you at least get a guy that you can at least show the fans and say, look, we're still being competitive. We have an opportunity to win this. Like, we got to the finals last year with Luka, but that we didn't break through. It didn't really matter at that point. So it feels like to me, this is a move to try and make another run in this title window and then figure out what is the next move from there. And again, one thing that we always discuss too in the league, especially for the NBA, is that ownership is always big. I know, obviously, this is a timeline where Miriam Adelson is now the governor of the franchise and Mark Cuban's taking a step back. So the question also too is that where was the, on the level, where was the money? Was the money important here or not? Because it comes back to one of the reasons why this trade probably happened was it's a $347 million contract. It would have been the most expensive contract in NBA history.
Sure.
And at that point, the question you do have to ask if you're Dallas is, if we have concerns that Luka isn't going to stay healthy or his conditioning is not that great, then you have to legitimately think about it, because a supermax of that level really hampers you under the collective bargaining agreement. And you might not get other guys to come play there. And at least now, worst case scenarios, you're just starting the reset button a little early, but still allowing yourself to have a championship window. Because it's very rare we've seen in the NBA where you make a blockbuster trade like this and one team and both teams essentially get something back at that point.
Yeah.
In the same timeline, because it's never really happened before. Usually it's a team selling off an asset to get to, you know, essentially selling off an asset, whether it's a draft pick or if it's anything along those lines, that you're hoping for the future. In this case for Dallas, they're still going to still be competitor. Both teams, I feel like, opened up their championship windows rather than where they currently stood. Because let's be honest, I don't think either of us thought that Dallas or the Lakers as presently constitute was going to make a deep push for the playoffs anyway.
No, they weren't. And this is one of those things where when you look at the historical scope of this, that what's just fascinating to me is that when Kyrie ended up coming to Dallas, and that was what they had to do to kind of scramble once they lost Jalen Brunson, that was a thing where, you know, that Luka probably had discussions with Kyrie about, you know, what did you learn playing with LeBron? What did you learn, you know, being in that, you know, to be tactful, you know, I'm sure he wouldn't say in that secondary position with LeBron, but what did you learn from that that's going to help you playing with me? I'm sure they had discussions about that. Versus what the farewell conversation must have been like, hey, what's it going to be like for me to go be LeBron's sidekick? Like, he probably never thought he'd have that mirror situation here with Kyrie. But from the historical point of view, it's hilarious that it ends up playing out that way. He gets a guy whose most successful part of his career was being the sidekick for LeBron, only for him now to become that, which, you know, again, you know, in a lot of ways, not defensively, but in a lot of ways, he's already better than LeBron. And we would probably take him higher than LeBron in a ranking of the top players in the league. But perceptually, at least, he walks in the door as the sidekick.
Right. And it's going to be really interesting situation, because for Luka, it's a temporary scenario since LeBron will be retiring in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how what he learns from that situation, because this is also the first time we've had two ball-dominant guys, but who are also incredibly talented at passing at the same time. So it doesn't feel like – normally we would say this would not work.
Right.
But they both are very active in making their teammates better. So it feels like it will work on some level. And if you want to just go full circle, the irony of this is that the other team in the deal, Utah, is their GM is Danny Ainge, who tried to get AD when he was in Boston during that timeline when Kyrie was there.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's really wild how stuff is like. I still think, and I've seen enough podcasts right now, or emergency podcasts of this, like, we're still sort of, this is one of those trades that's just so gargantuan. I still feel like a lot of us are processing what could be, essentially. And, I mean, and the thing, too, is that you're going to see two teams who have opened up their title window. Utah collected more assets. If the biggest winner was Luka Doncic, the second biggest winner was Jalen Hood-Schifino, because he finally gets off the bench.
Yeah.
So he'll have an opportunity to make some plays there. And again, Dallas received, you know, Christie was also part of the deal, who I've always thought was a very interesting player. He's sort of like a younger version of Klay Thompson right now, who they already have. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this sort of plays out. Because again, I felt like, and I think everyone would agree, that we all felt like the West was like youth was going to win the day. And with this deal now, I think it shakes up the playoff chase out West. And it would not shock me if either of these teams, because of this deal, make a run at some point for a title. Because there's just so much youth at the top of the Western Conference that we do not know how these teams are going to react in the playoffs. We just don't.
Yeah, that's true. So you get to see how that all plays out. And then I'm going to bring up also, too, the different scenarios that we've seen when teams draft franchise players in the NBA over the course of the last decade plus, whatever. There have been a couple of different scenarios. We had thought previously that the worst case scenario was Ben Simmons in Philadelphia, of where it just doesn't work out, that the guy just doesn't take the steps that are necessary to get to that next level. And there's also the LeBron scenario, if we go back a little bit further. First time in Cleveland, a couple of near misses, doesn't get the job done, leaves a lot of heartbreak in his wake. More recently, as much as I'm not a fan of his personally, Jason Tatum. I hate to put the guy over, but that's the scenario where you draft a guy, you build around him, and hey, eventually you end up getting it done. We now have a fourth scenario that we never dreamed possible, because who thinks to themselves, this guy's going to be just about everything we want him to be, but we're still going to move him before he gets signed to this like huge extension. Like, that's just unfathomable. There's not ever been a guy. Usually it's because there's some tarnish here or there or whatever. But I mean, Luka, by and large, you can question the conditioning, the defense, how well he's kind of held up physically, maybe because of the conditioning. But all of the moments that he's had thus far in the league, what has been to this point in time a first ballot Hall of Fame career in the league, seeing a guy like that get moved just seems completely unprecedented.
And I feel like this is a deal that, I mean, I saw it a lot online discussed. This is an NBA 2K deal. This is just something to dream up in your franchise mode.
Yeah.
And it's coming into real life. And I feel like, too, just this trade, I feel like, is going to set a precedent for future NBA star trades. Because before, there used to be a list, and we all know there's a list of untouchable guys that are not going to ever be traded.
Yeah,
well, Luka was on that list for a lot of people, so I feel like that list is now gone. Like, that list right now is Wemby and Wemby only.
Yeah.
So it feels almost like, again, at this point, anything can still happen. The league is just when everyone thought the NBA was getting boring, we get insanity as usual. So this is why this league is just so incredible to cover and to just watch on a daily basis. So if this is almost a manna from heaven situation.
I'm feeling a sudden urge right now to get on the dark web, find Kobe Altman's address, drive over there, and demand that he will never trade Evan Mobley, because I never would have thought I would have had to say that before today. But like, anything seems possible in a negative sense. Yeah. I mean,
and we've just, because again, I think a lot of people felt like if there was a guy who was pretty much untouchable on the trade market, it was Luka Doncic, or at least he was on the list.
You'd have thought
so. Now that list, in my opinion, is gone. Outside of Wemby, I don't think there's any guy right now
in
the league that cannot be traded.
Yeah. If they could trade Luka, .. That's kind of where it is.
Yeah.
And again, just an unfathomable situation. And the great thing about doing a conversation like this with you, I mean, you and I have had a chance to think about this, but at the same time, we're still sort of processing it in real time. I mean, I think we're going to the next couple of days as we go along, but in the midst of that, got some great material out of this. So I want to thank you for having suggested this to me, Ben, and just see if you have any more closing thoughts on this.
I mean, the real question, and I feel like this is going to be the most interesting part now, is that with the West being now even more competitive because of this deal, how that's going to impact the Western Conference playoffs. Because right now, I think everyone pretty much at this time felt like Dallas and LA were not really relevant in the conversation.
Right.
And I feel like now they are somewhat relevant in the conversation if either situation can be made work. And again, this can only be good news for the Eastern Conference. Like, they're, another superstar was dealt within the West, so they didn't have to deal with any scenario of having another team drastically shake up the playoff race out there. So
true.
It's going to be really interesting in terms of competition. And I think the big thing, too, is that now we had the super team era. Now we're entering the dual star era. And I feel like we're going to see more of the cards fall. Because, again, this is before the trade deadline. Usually a deal like this happens at the trade deadline. So there's still like three or four days at this point for other deals to get done. And I feel like we're now going to see a lot of movement with the De'Aaron Fox and the Jimmy Butler trade. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how these other teams are going to, because I feel like on some level it's going to be an arms race to try to keep up with the Lakers in the future, because I think a lot of people, including myself, thought, well, LeBron and AD will play for a couple more years and then AD will lead the franchise in its absence, and now it's going to be Luka Doncic, which is a similar scenario. So it's just going to be very, very interesting the next couple of weeks and as we head into the playoffs and what the Lakers are go, because in my opinion before this, the Lakers were somewhat relevant at best, but now I feel like almost everything, if Luka can come back healthy and play for them, it's become must-watch TV at this point.
I agree with that. I think that's definitely the case. I think that the Lakers at this point, you know, for as much as we laughed about the fact that they were still on national TV, what seemed like almost the maximum amount of times, that will not change for as far as the eye can see at this point, because they've done something to keep themselves relevant. And again, just the long sweep of history with the Lakers continuing to get that guy somehow or another. And you go back to even how they were able to get Magic Johnson in the first place in 79 from watching, you know, you and I watched the old, you know, mini series on that there. But I think that was that not, I think a trade with the Jazz for Gail Goodrich, wasn't that how they ended up getting that? Yeah. So it's a thing where, I mean, and if you look at his career, which was pretty awesome, but versus Magic Johnson, one of the greatest players of all time, even that doesn't come close to this. And again, it was a player for a pick. And that kind of backs up what we're saying about all of this is that, you know, two superstars in their prime. I mean, AD is, you know, at the back end of his prime, but clearly still in his prime. And there was a lot more talk about him this year as far as like, oh, this is the AD of old, and this is who we've wanted to see when he's, you know, held up healthy and everything. So, you know, certainly two players in their prime, you don't see it. Two players that are you know, all-time players that again, in the notation of myself, Ben Chu, and Russ Cohen, among the top 75 players in NBA history. And that is something where, again, when we go to do the top 80 subsequently, I'm sure that will be noted in there what kind of a moment this was. But, again, just want to thank you so much, Ben. Thanks so much for being here, for being a part of this and breaking it down with me. It's a unique moment in sports history. Can't think of anybody to break it better down with than you.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick. It's always the Jalen Hood Shafino of it all. So,
yeah. Danny Ainge trying to imitate Kobe Altman here and get him a Jared Allen in the deal, right? Everybody's always got to try to maneuver.
I mean, like I said, it's good for Jalen. I'm happy for him because he was really benched on the Lakers, just of all the guards that they have now.
Yeah,
he'll have an opportunity to probably make a name for himself. And yeah, we'll see again how some of these rotation pieces are included in the deal, like Maxi Kleber, you know, Markieff Morris. We're going to see a lot. It's going to be really interesting to see how this trade impacts a lot of different careers.
Yeah, it's going to. Not least of which, Nico Harrison, who will be remembered solely for this deal, for good or for ill. And I have my suspicions on what that's going to be at the moment, and I'm sure he would like that to be anything other than what myself and a lot of other people suspect it to be. So we'll see how it plays out. You and I were slated at some point soon here to catch up on the NBA on the show. I look forward to doing that with you. Thanks so much, Ben Chu. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1808.